Hi, I'm Dan Q, and you're listening to a podcast that nobody asked for, exclusively about things that only I find interesting. Today, I'll be talking about the elegance and beauty of the ASCII table. As usual, there's a blog post accompanying this episode. Today, you'll find it at danq.link/ASCII. The elegance of the ASCII table. If you've been a programmer or programming-adjacent nerd, perhaps a geocacher who occasionally finds themselves having to decode binary to ASCII, you'll have doubtless come across an ASCII table. An ASCII table is useful. But did you know it's also beautiful and elegant? Even non-programmer-adjacent nerds might have a cultural awareness of ASCII tables, thanks to books and films like The Martian. You remember that bit in both the book and the film when Mark Watney divides a circle around his recovered Pathfinder lander into segments corresponding to hexadecimal digits 0 through F, so that he can allow the rotation of its camera, controlled by operators on Earth, to transmit pairs of 4-bit words, and those 4-bit words make 8-bit bytes, which he can decode as ASCII, thereby establishing a means to re-establish communication with Earth.
I figured one of you guys kept an ASCII table lying around, and I was right. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you super nerd Beth Johansson, who also had copies of Zork 2 and Leather Goddesses of Phobos on her personal laptop.
ASCII is very much still around. Even if you're transmitting modern Unicode, then the most popular encoding format, UTF-8, is specifically designed to be backwards compatible with ASCII. If you were reading the blog post version of this, it would be transmitted as Unicode, but if you tried to decode it as ASCII, you'd still get the gist of it. Let's look at the history. ASCII was initially standardized as X3.4-1963. Gosh, that just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? This standard assigned meanings to 100 of the potential 128 code points that are presented by a 7-bit binary representation. That is, it encoded characters for the binary values 0000000 through 111111. If you're thinking 7-bit, that's not right. That's because you've usually seen 8-bit representations. 8 bits is a really convenient number in computing because it's a power of 2, but even early 8-bit systems would be far more likely to use their 8th bit as a parity check, saving the remaining 7 bits for an encoding like ASCII. If you look at X3.4-1963, you'll see that it's a bit different from a modern ASCII table. For a start, it entirely misses the lowercase alphabet, and there's a few other quirks that ASCII fans like me might spot, like the up and left arrows or the ACK and escape control codes. But in any case, if you've got a screen close to hand and you can look up an ASCII table, that might help with the next part of this podcast. If not, that's fine, just bear in mind that I'm going to be speaking binary for some of it. You'll work it out. The ASCII table I'm looking at right now is divided into 4 columns of 32 items each. That's a common way to lay out an ASCII table, though not the only way, but laying it out that way does help us to see some of the patterns that make the ASCII table beautiful. On my table, the first column, that is, the first 32 characters, are things that you as a human don't get to see. They're commands sent between machines to provide additional instructions. They're called control codes. You might be familiar with carriage return 0D and line feed 10, which mean go back to the beginning of this line and advance to the next line respectively. You may also know that we often see those two together as a pair. They have distinct meanings if you are printing with a teletype printer. But more than that, sending 2 characters buys the printer time to move the head slowly to the left back to the beginning of the page, which is important. You don't want to be printing the next character halfway through retreating to the left-hand side of the paper. Some teletype printers were so slow they needed to be sent a few null bytes as well, so you would send to them carriage return, line feed, null, 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 to buy them time to get reset before you started typing the next line. Back then, printers didn't have a buffer of memory to store the characters that they were going to print in the future, so you had to send them one character at a time. When mini-computers began to appear, like those produced by DEC, they wanted to remain backwards compatible with the existing teletypes, so you could connect the computer to either a modern screen or to an old-fashioned teletype and have it work, and so they used carriage return and line feed to mean go to the next line on the screen. When the next generation of computers came along, they wanted to be backwards compatible with those that already existed, so they too started using the combination of carriage return and line feed to mean go to the next line, and so by installments we end up where we are today, where many computers, including virtually all Windows systems virtually all of the time and a lot of the internet, sends two characters for one operation. Go to the next line. This chain of backwards compatibility that ceased to be relevant decades ago remains with us forever as part of our digital heritage. Anyway, we were talking about control codes. Most of the others you don't see widespread use of anymore. They were designed for very different kinds of computer systems than we routinely use today, but they're still there in ASCII. 32, the number of control codes in that first column, is a power of 2, which means that you'd rightly expect these control codes to mathematically all share a particular pattern in their binary representation with one another and distinct from the rest of the table, and they do. All of the control codes follow the pattern 00 something 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 something. That is, they all begin with 2 zeros. So when you're reading 7-bit ASCII, if it starts with 00, it's a non-printing character. Otherwise, it's a printing character. Yes, I did say 7-bit ASCII. If what you're reading seems to have 8 bits in a byte, and the first bit is always 0, just drop that first bit. Remember what I said, ASCII's a 7-bit code. That pattern, that control codes start 00, makes it very easy for humans to read binary encoded ASCII, and with it, it makes the code less arbitrary and more beautiful. It also helps if you're an ancient, slow computer system comparing one bit of information at a time, because you can use a decision tree to make shortcuts about the kind of operation you'll perform in response to receiving a particular character. There is one exception to the control codes. Delete is the last character in the table. Character 127, represented by the binary number 111111. Now, that's a historical throwback to paper tape, where a keyboard would punch some permutation of 7 holes to represent the ones and zeros of each character. The thing about punching holes in tape is you can't unpunch them. So the only way to mark a character as invalid on punched tape, or indeed some kinds of cards, was to rewind the tape and punch out all of the holes in that position, i.e. all ones. That's why del in the ASCII table is position 127, because 127 is 111111, as in all of the holes punched out. The first printable character on the ASCII table is space. It's an invisible character, but it's one that still has meaning to humans, so it's not a control character. That sounds like an obvious thing to say today, but it was actually the source of some semantic argument when the ASCII standard was first being discussed. Putting space numerically before any other printed character was a very carefully considered and deliberate choice. The reason? Sorting. For a computer to sort a list of files or strings or whatever, it's easiest if it can do so numerically using the same character conversion table it uses for all other purposes. So the space character must naturally come before other characters, or else John Smith doesn't appear before Johnny 5 in a computer-sorted list, like you'd expect him to. Being the first printing character, and in the 33rd position, 33 being a power of 2 plus 1, space also enjoys a beautiful and memorable binary representation that's easy for humans to recognise. 010, 00, 00. Next, we've got the numbers. The position of the Arabic numerals 0 to 9 in the ASCII table is no coincidence either. Their position means that they start with 0 at the nice round binary value 011000, and they continue sequentially. So 011001 is 1. 011000 is 2. 011001 is 3, and so on. The last four digits of the binary are a representation of the value of the decimal digit depicted, and the last digit of the hexadecimal representation is the decimal digit as well. That's just brilliant. By the way, if you're reading the post or listening to this podcast to teach yourself to read binary formatted ASCII in your head, here's the rule to take away from this bit. If it begins 011, treat the remainder as a binary representation of an actual digit. You'll probably be right. And if the number you get is above 9, it just means it was some kind of punctuation or something. Now, subtract 001000 from each of the numbers, and you get the shifted numbers. The first ones occupied us by a space character already, which is a shame, but for the rest of them, the characters are what you get if you press the shift key and that number on your keyboard at the same time. Hang on. No, it's not. Yeah, I've got a 105-key ISO UK QWERTY keyboard in front of me, and only 1, 2, 3, 4 of the 9 digits 1 to 9 have their shifted variants properly represented in ASCII, and that is, I'm afraid, because ASCII wasn't based on modern computer keyboards. It was based on the shifted positions of a Remington No. 2 mechanical typewriter. I guess the shifted layout of that was the closest compromise they could find as a standard at the time. But hey, you've just got to learn something about typewriters today. Is that a consolation? Here's a bonus fun fact, if not. Early mechanical typewriters usually omitted a number 1. It was expected that you'd type the letter I instead, which is fine for printed work, but for computer-readable data, it doesn't really work. Next, the letters. Like the numbers, the letters get a pattern. After the at symbol, at 100000, the uppercase all begin 10, followed by the binary representation of their position in the alphabet. A is the first letter of the alphabet, so you'll find it at 100000, 1. B is the second letter of the alphabet, so you'll find it at 100000, 10, 10 being binary for 2. And so on, all the way up to Z, 10, 11010, 11010 is of course binary for 26. If you can learn the positions of the letters in the alphabet and their numbers, and you can count in binary, you now know enough to be able to read any ASCII uppercase letter that's been encoded as binary. All you're doing is taking off the 10 at the beginning, turning the remainder into a decimal number, and taking the letter at that position. And once you know the uppercase letters, the lowercase ones are easy too. Their position in the table means they're exactly 010000 higher than the uppercase variants, i.e. all the lowercase letters begin 11. A is the first letter of the alphabet, so lowercase a is found at 11000001. 26 for Z is 11110010, because 11010, as we just discussed, is 26 in binary. If you're wondering why the uppercase letters come first in the ASCII table, the answer again is sorting. Also, the fact that the first implementation of ASCII, which we talked about earlier, was put together before it was certain that computer systems would need separate character codes for upper and lowercase letters. I suppose one could conceive of an alternative implementation that instead sent control codes to instruct the recipient to switch case, for example. Given the way that technology is now used, I'm glad they made the decision they did. It's beautiful. There's this strange and subtle charm to ASCII. Given that we use it, or things derived from it, literally all the time in our modern lives and in our everyday devices, it's easy to think of it as just some arbitrary encoding. But the choices that were made in deciding what streams of ones and zeros would represent which characters exposes a refined logic. It's aesthetically pleasing. It's littered with historical artifacts that teach us a hidden history of computing, and it's built on top of patterns that are sufficiently sophisticated to facilitate powerful processing while still being coherent enough for a human to memorize, learn, and understand. Once again, this episode was based on a blog post which you can find at danq.link/ASCII. If ever there was an episode of my podcast that you should read the blog post for, it's this one. If you enjoyed today's episode, leave a comment there or email me on podcast@danq.me. And as always, Dan Q for listening. Dan Q very much.